Hello everyone, welcome to the TriStar Gym channel. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about current events, new current events. TriStar Gym unfortunately closed again, so I'm going to be talking about that, what's going on in Canada, Quebec, Canada especially. And of course, now is Ramadan. Thank you, Kareem. Ramadan Kareem to you all. All of you who are starting fasting today, Ramadan Kareem to you all. Thank you very much for the kind wishes. Thank you very much. Love from Turkey. GSP, love from Turkey. Thank you very much. Give me a thumbs up. Let me know the mic is working. I'm not just talking to myself. As usual, guys, give me that thumbs up. Thank you, Ali Shah. Thank you very much. And yes, Ramadan has started. So Ramadan Kareem to you all who are now fasting. Yes, Prince Yusuf, I'm of course fasting as well. So Ramadan has started off for us all. What else has been going on? Well, unfortunately, I have to say the TriStar Gym has been closed again. Lots of trouble here brewing in Quebec. A lot of people upset about this. The curfew here in Quebec has now been pushed back to 8 o'clock. Okay, so they had us on a 8 o'clock curfew, then they moved us to 9:30 p.m. and now we're being policed again. The curfew is being pushed to 8 p.m. You cannot leave your house after 8 p.m. Well, I have a lot of things I want to talk about. I want to touch on this issue of what's going on. But before that, I want to play you guys a little clip here that I found. There's been a riot. You know, there's been some pushback. You know, the people are now, people here in Quebec are really upset with this curfew. So last week we had a protest here. And I'm going to show you guys a little clip in the news of what happened here in Montreal, Quebec. Let me just push play here. Hopefully we can all hear it.
Afternoon, there is major cleanup underway in Old Montreal. Last night, hundreds of people gathered to protest against Quebec's new 8 o'clock curfew. It very quickly turned ugly. City crews were out early this morning trying to clear the streets. Fires were set, windows were broken, and there is garbage littering the streets. 7 people were arrested and more than 100 tickets were issued. There was a lot of damage, Billy, and this is the last thing those businesses need.
That's right, Mitsumi. Consider this. There have been the restrictions that businesses have had to comply with. A lot of that has been cutting into their bottom line. But we're also in the most touristy part of Montreal. And, oh yeah, for the better part of a year, there haven't been any tourists. So this is like just a great big gathering. It then declined very, very quickly. And what happened was people were lighting garbage cans on fire.
There we go. At least one garbage can was lit on fire. Not a protest without it. This is not the best coverage I found. There was about, I would say, over 1,000 people. And the Montrealers were rioting, breaking down businesses, smashing up the place. Why? Because they pushed the curfew back to 8 o'clock. People are really losing it here in Montreal. I just came back from Las Vegas. I just came back from also the Mohegan Sun. I was in New York as well for the Bellator event. Everything is almost everything in the USA is open. The gyms are open. The restaurants are open. Business is flourishing. Things are happening in the US. The airports are jam-packed full. The flights are starting to fill up again. When I went to Vegas, both going in and out, the flight was full at capacity. And then you land here in Montreal, you get to Montreal, and it's just a ghost town. There's so little action. And now they have reclosed their gym. For those of you who don't know, last month they opened this up for 2 weeks. They said, okay, guys, you can open up again. Follow these protocols. So, of course, gym members and gym owners, we organized ourselves, spent a bunch of money getting our gyms ready. And we opened them up. And then 2 weeks later, they shut us down again. When they shut us down, with no real rationale, you know, some guy about 6 hours away, no, excuse me, not even, about 2 hours away from me, opened his gym, didn't follow protocols, and he had a breakout in his gym. It was in the news. So lo and behold, a few days later, they have a press conference, and they're like, we're closing off all gyms. It seemed like they were kind of setting us up, showing us that one guy didn't follow protocol, one guy didn't, you know, supposedly he was saying in the news that he doesn't believe in coronavirus, that it's all BS, etc. One guy ruined it all for all gyms in Quebec. So as of now, we're locked down again. They opened this up for 2 weeks and they locked us down again. Now listen, I'm a believer in coronavirus. I've had coronavirus. I know coronavirus is real. I've been sick with corona. I know many people have had corona. it's not a question of denying coronavirus. You know, nobody, I don't think, out there is really, no serious person is denying that the virus exists. I think we all agree that the virus exists. My thing is that I'm in a position where I look at the Quebec government, what they're doing, and I ask myself, is this a government that's really managing a pandemic? And my answer to that is no. Why? Like I told you, in the US, everything is open. In the US, it's personal responsibility. If you don't want to catch COVID, don't go outside. Because you know what? People who want to risk catching COVID are out there running their businesses, and they're out there making money, and they're out there doing whatever it takes. Life is going on in the USA. In Quebec, you don't have that choice to take the risk. In Quebec, we tie you down. You must stay home. You must obey the law. You have to quarantine. And then I look at what the government issues, you know, what the government has been doing. And the malls are open. We have the biggest mall in the province. It's open. And the schools are open. That tells me the government's not really in a pandemic. If you were in a true pandemic, if you truly wanted to protect your population from a pandemic that's circulating, you wouldn't allow malls to be open. Malls it's not a necessary business. It's not it's not something that we absolutely must have. The only thing open should be grocery stores. The only thing open, if you're in a true pandemic, like I believe now Ontario, our neighboring province, is truly in a pandemic right now. They literally have closed everything down. Schools, airports, obviously gyms, restaurants, malls, everything is closed. Now, that tells me that they really believe they're in a pandemic, and I think they'll be successful. If Quebec were to close everything down for 4 weeks, then I would be like, you know what? This is really a pandemic. We should all close, and we should all be very wary, and we shouldn't be rioting the streets and protesting these curfews. It's for 4 weeks, you know. In 4 weeks, it makes total sense. In 4 weeks, you're either going to survive coronavirus or you're going to die from it, but you ain't going to pass it on if you're locked down for 4 weeks. If you're truly locked down for 4 weeks, you're not passing it on. So I'm really upset, guys. I have to say, I'm really upset that my gym is closed again. TriStar Gym is unfortunately closed again. I can't believe it. But it's been a year now the gym is closed, and we reopened for a brief 2 weeks, which was fun. It was great to see all my students again. The gym was full, and of course we followed all the rules. We kept the capacity at 50 people, but every night it was full, and we had to stop taking more people. But at the end of the day, the incredible inefficiencies of the rule makers, the incredible, I would have to say, incompetence of the rule makers has forced us again to shut down, only because they need to keep their malls open, their Walmarts open, and of course their grocery stores, which is spreading, all coronavirus is spreading in the malls, in the grocery stores, in the Walmarts. That's where coronavirus is spreading for certain, because that's where the majority of people group. In schools, of course, kids are asymptomatic, but they're passing it on. They're coming home to mom and dad, and they're passing it on. Yet they saved the country by closing this little one small little place they call TriStar Gym. This little tiny little space. And the reason why I'm making such a big deal out of it is the week I was open, legally open, they send the cops to my gym 3 times in one day. They send the cops to my gym 3 times in one day to see that we're obeying the law and we're following protocols, etc., which we were. We didn't get a fine. The gym did not get a fine. However, the mall is jam-packed with young kids and elderly people shopping around, touching things, trying things on, and they keep policing my tiny little gym. They keep saying, hey, these people here, these people, they're the cause of the spread of, coronavirus is spreading like wildfire in the TriStar Gym. This is one little locale with just a few hundred people that come in every week, and everybody's staying at 2 meter distance, and it's a very large gym, and I took every protocol to make sure that I follow the rules. They send the cops to my gym 3 times in one day, which is incredible. And now the riots are breaking out because they want to bring us back to 8 o'clock p.m. Curfew. Contrast that with my trip to the United States, man. It makes me want to move to the United States really badly. The United States, I was in the gym. They were, you know, because between quarantines, I got to have a few days of freedom. I was in it before testing again and being quarantined again. I was in a gym. They're doing, and a shout out to Syndicate for having us, allowing us to use their gym. They were having kids class, professional class, jiu-jitsu, boxing. I mean, it's in the U.S., they're back to it. And of course, Florida, Texas, fully open. Is coronavirus spreading in the U.S.? Of course it is. But it's personal responsibility. Younger people like myself and you guys out there can take the risk if they choose to. And of course, you know, it's personal responsibility. Don't go train at a gym and then go visit grandma. That would be stupid. That would just be you being stupid. Now, nobody's that dumb. I like to think nobody's that dumb. But if I was an elderly person, I would tell people, hey, you can't come over my house. You cannot come and visit me. I'm susceptible to this coronavirus. Contrast what the U.S. is doing with what Canada is doing. Canada is taking everybody by the hand and kind of forcing them. No, they're not kind of, they are forcing us to comply. Even if your death, even if your chances of dying from COVID is less than 1%, you have to stay home. You have to stay home and you have to quarantine. And you have to be in bed by 8. Just pure insanity, guys. This is what was on my mind today when I woke up. I woke up from my little nap and this is what was on my mind. And with that said, guys, I will answer the super chats that have been flying in right now. And let's get this party started. Okay, here we go. This is from Alex Snake. Snake Doc. Alex Snake Doc. Salam, coach. Is it better to do judo or freestyle wrestling if the goal is to become a great at throws, reaps, trips, foot sweeps in no gi? That's from Alex Snake Doc. Well, you know what? I would tell you, I would choose wrestling. Okay? Wrestling without the gi, because your goal is no gi. Now, do wrestlers do trips, throws, reaps, foot sweeps? Yes, they do. Absolutely, they do. But it's not the primary takedown. And the reason why is because you have no grips to do that. So I think you're soon going to learn that without the gi, the reaps and trips are not as effective. They are effective and there's a place for them. And we use them on a regular basis. However, there's a lot less leverage in no gi. So if your goal is no gi, learn freestyle wrestling. I would recommend do some judo on the side because that will accelerate your trips, your ashiwaza. But definitely do freestyle wrestling. Absolutely. If you're looking for no-gi competition, that's what I would do. Okay, my friends. What else do we got here? Cesar Rodriguez. Coach, move your gym to the mall. Problem solved. Cesar, you're a genius, actually. That's pretty smart, man. I wish they would just chase me there, blow up the doors and pin me down and take me to Guantanamo Bay. Unfortunately, this is what they would do. What do you think of Sean O'Malley's performance against Almeida and what do you think of his potential? That's from Brooke. Brooke, I really thought he fought very, very well. We all, for those who saw the fight, we all saw that, you know, he pretty much had it finished in round one, but he kind of laid back, didn't. He had knocked down Almeida pretty badly. It seemed like Almeida was due for to be finished. And Sean O'Malley kind of walked off and kind of realized, hey, he's not finished. He thought the referee was going to step in. It wasn't the case. And Almeida came back to survive that round, survive the next round, and then was finished a second time in round three. To me, to make it all more impressive, you know, O'Malley showed he could finish Almeida twice. You know, it wasn't a lucky punch. It wasn't something that just happens. It wasn't a happenstance. You know, he's that much better than Almeida. He can do it twice. So I was very impressed, and I think he showed how talented he is. I think he will go very far, and sooner or later, he'll challenge for a title fight. Okay, we got super chats pouring in. How to spot BJJ McDojos? How can you tell if they promote people prematurely? That's from IR. That's a good question. Look, does their gym have good competitors? When your teacher teaches stuff, does it blow your mind? Is it like, wow, that's really impressive? And then when you go and try it, does it actually work? You know, does it work? Are you getting better exponentially? When visitors roll from other schools, come in from other schools, you know, there's always visitors from out of town. When you roll with them, how well do you do? Are you getting killed by blue belts when you're a purple belt? You know, that would make sense. So you'd have to, you know, eventually travel, especially when you travel out of town, go to a BJJ club. You know, that's what I always do. And I wrestle. I go to an MMA gym and I wrestle. And I see, oh, that guy's a purple belt. Well, in my gym, maybe he would be a purple belt or a brown belt or a blue belt. Or, you know, you kind of assess where would he be in my gym. That's how I recommend you go about it. This is from Shafato. Everyone is probably asking this considering people are fasting, but what is the recommendation regarding working out during this month? Ramadan Mubarak. as well, coach. That's from Shafato. Okay, so Shafato is asking a question I get a lot, actually, so I'm going to spend a little time answering that. How do you train during Ramadan? In Ramadan, you cannot eat from sunrise to sunset. Okay, so a little bit before sunrise. You cannot eat or drink any water until the sun sets. So today in Canada, the sun's setting. I haven't checked, but it's like 7:40, let's say. So almost 8 p.m. Okay, let's call it 8 p.m. And you got to stop eating, let's say, from 3:30 a.m. Okay, let's say 3 a.m., okay? 3 a.m. to 8 p.m., you cannot eat or drink or consume water. So when are you going to train? That's actually something I've been struggling with. I'm not sure when I'm going to train. So this morning, I did not train. I'm thinking of training right before eating. I'm going to experiment with that, maybe right before eating. But the problem is training right before eating, you have zero motivation. So a true key to training is doing a long warm-up. If you're going to train fasted, you have no water, no food in your system, make the warm-up longer. Because let's say you're going to jump right into the workout, which is something I do quite a bit. Okay, I'm not a huge believer in warming up. Okay, and I know it's not ideal. But I'm the type of guy, well, I'll teach class, I didn't warm up, it's time to roll, I just jump on the mat and I roll. Now, with that said, I have my own ways of warming up. So I'll take somebody smaller than me my first roll, or I'll just play guard the first round. Like, I'll warm up my own way. I just won't warm up like the rest of the class, okay? Because I'd fall behind on the rounds. You know, everybody'd be rolling while I'm warming up, because obviously when they're doing technique, I'm kind of walking around helping people with their technique. So I'm not really getting a chance to warm up. So warm up is important, but especially when you feel sore, tired, you're not sure if you should work out today or not, do a long warm up, warm up, warm up. If after a long warm up, you still don't feel right, in my opinion, shut it down. Your body is going into recovery. The workout will do more harm than good. If after your warm up, you start feeling good, go through the workout. And I'll tell you something, that 99% of the time, when you do a long warm up, you will eventually start feeling good and you can work out. I'm a big believer in feeling good. Okay. So again, guys, don't forget, I'm not a bodybuilder. I'm not trying to, because people always write me after and they're like, coach, if you want your pecs to grow and you want your lats to pop, you got to push it. You got to burn them. I get it. Maybe in bodybuilding. Yes. Okay. I'm talking about building skill. I'm talking about building like martial arts skill. Okay. So for me, in my opinion, skills have to be practiced as often as possible. So I practice to the level where I feel good that I can do it the next day again. Consistency over intensity. I will train 365 days a year instead of training 100 days a year. And also, when I don't push the envelope, the chances of me getting injured are far less. So I'm injured a lot less than you are. So that 100 days of training you would have done is really like 80, 90 days, you know. You got to chop even more days off. So I'm constantly training all the time, developing skills, having new epiphanies, developing new combinations, etc. So again, guys, I'm not talking about hypertrophy. I'm not talking about muscular growth. I'm not an expert in muscular growth. What makes the muscle grow? It's not something that I've researched very much in my life. Okay, so maybe there's a way to make your muscles grow that's different than what I'm talking about. I'm talking about building skill. So in short, in Ramadan, take your warm-ups super serious. Triple the time of your warm-up and try to do it before you break your fast. Try to do it before you break your fast. If you're going to do it after you break your fast, then you're going to need to wait and digest. So I would recommend a very small meal and then do the workout after your fast, but preferably before. How do I stop anxiety during hard sparring? When the intensity goes up during a round, I panic a little bit and this seems to drain my energy. That's from Lewis. Well, Lewis, I know exactly how you feel. Well, my second sparring in my life, I was sparring with somebody called Anthony the Terminator Yamarella. And Anthony Terminator Yamarella was called that because he was a killer. He had a lot more experience than me and my trainer, a crazy Muay Thai master. That's his name. We call him Muay Thai master. Peter Sison Fu. He threw me in there with him and it didn't end well. Like, the guy beat me up. He had to stop the round. I was very green. I was very, very green. And there I am with the Canadian Muay Thai champ. He's just mauling me. And that's how TriStar was back in the day. You know, before, honestly, I changed things. I don't allow that kind of training in my gym anymore. And this is before I owned the gym. Okay, so once I took over the gym, you know, I had traveled around the world. I had come up with new training philosophies. I think that if you're having this much anxiety, it's because you're matched with somebody that's way too experienced for you. Okay, it has to be challenging but yet comfortable. You want to be outside your comfort zone, but not so much that you're having a panic attack. Okay, so if you're having a panic attack, it's because you have, you feel like you're in danger, and if you're in danger, it's because your training partner is trying to hurt you. You know, so I would recommend try to find a gym that has a different type of training mentality, or choose, if you can, try to find sparring partners that are ready to work with touch sparring, and slowly progress from touch sparring to full on sparring. But try to cultivate a sense of control, you know, both you and your partner, you know. So I find this is the very important. That's how fighters actually get good. Now, there are gyms that do it the total opposite of what I'm saying. Some gyms, they live in a very busy city. So let's say you have a, I don't want to name a city, but let's say you're in a city with like 5 million people, and you got a gym owner there, and he puts in a 20 alpha males in one room, and they beat each other up. And the last five guys that survive that beating, he spends a lot of time training those guys, and those guys become superstars. Well, I'll tell you, that trainer is not very good. He doesn't have to be very good. All he did was put in, he just so happened to live in a place where there's full of athletes that want to compete. He's in a metropolitan city. He put them through the grinder. He let them all beat each other up. And naturally, the more talented ones will survive this beating, this battle royale. And then those last, he just spent a lot of time polishing them as best he can. And that's not really the art of training. Okay, the art of training is everybody in the practice room, everybody improves. Okay, it's not like five really good guys and the rest is just like broken bodies. No, a good trainer, he walks in the practice room, he improves everybody. Everybody improves, and everybody trains at a rate that is sustainable. Meaning you're training so hard, but you're not breaking your back. You're training really hard, but without injuring yourself. Okay, because you could train really hard to injury. We want to pull it back from injury. Okay, so there's a right amount of training. He monitors the right amount. He's technical. He's organized. And a mark of a good trainer is everybody he trains, from the amateur to the pro, they all get better. From the talented to the extremely talented. From the not so talented to the extremely talented. They all improve. They're all exploiting their potential. This is the mark of a great trainer. Okay, what do we got here? Tyler Ranking. Hey, coach, why is reach measure the way it is? Why is reach measured the way it is? The width of the torso plus two arm measurements should not be important in punching reach as much as the length of one arm, armpit to fingertip, height of arm from ground. That Tyler Ranking is asking, look, coach, why do they include the torso in the reach? Why do they include that? The size of your torso, the width of your torso shouldn't matter for arm length. Arm length should be measured from armpit to fingertip. I would say no, because when you're fighting, a lot of times you're bladed. So the distance between the length between your neck and shoulder also matters. Okay. And sometimes we lean our head back towards that shoulder. So I would say that this portion of your body also would matter. Now, you're right. It might be more accurate to do it from the armpit to the fingertip. It could be. Okay. What's the margin of error? It's going to be slight. It's not going to be that much difference, I would imagine. Could they make it better your way? I think it could be better your way, because not everybody fights bladed. You're right. A lot of Thai guys, they fight square. So you would be right in the instance of fighting square. Ramadan Mubarak from to everyone from Zach. Thank you, Zach. Thank you very much. MA Gamings. Should I fix my posture first, or should I start jiu-jitsu? I have a neck problem from my posture, so I'm working on it, but I want to start BJJ. That's from MA Gaming. Well, MA Gaming, I know a guy who had major neck problems early on in his jiu-jitsu career and kind of fixed it with some very simple exercises, and that guy happens to be me. Okay, so I'm going to show you guys an exercise right now that's going to keep your neck healthy. I want you guys to take 5 minutes now and learn this exercise, and anytime you have neck strain, which you will if you train MMA, you will, I promise you. I want you guys to do this exercise, okay? So this is from a book called How to Heal Your Own Neck. It's a really good book. I can't find it again. I bought it years ago, 20 years ago. I read it. I memorized it. And it's really, really simple. Okay, so watch here. All right, so I want to picture a string pulling my head up like this. Okay, so I don't want to be like this or like that. I want to pull. Imagine a string coming up from the top of your head here, pulling up just like this. So your neck is aligned. You take your two fingers on from each hand, put them on your chin. And then just push inwards like this. Really simple. You just push. and this is going to stretch your neck. Okay, you do that 50 times. Even better, when you wake up, take your morning shower, turn around, put that hot water on your neck, put that hot water on your neck, and let that hot water relax those muscles, and then do this exercise. And just elongate the neck. You're using your neck and chin, you're using your chin, your jaw and neck bones to create a lever to pull your vertebrae apart gently. Okay, you're pulling your vertebrae apart gently. You're decompressing them. And then he gives this other exercise. Okay, so you can push in and just turn gently to your right. Push in, turn gently to your left. Push in, tilt to your side a bit. Also, he does this one. Okay. You're working with reps of 20 to 50, I would say, okay, for each exercise. And I would just recommend doing half an hour every day till your neck starts to feel normal. Now, there's a lot more to knowing about neck. I really recommend you read the book by Kelly Starrett on The Supple Leopard, written by Kelly Starrett. That's a phenomenal book. You must have it. Buy a Tim Tam, a high-powered massager. Guys, shout out to TimTam.tech. They make the world's greatest massagers. Now, we have the mini high-powered massager. It's the world's most powerful mini massager in the world. I use that all the time. Use it on your neck. Keep your neck muscles loose. Do the exercise I showed you. And in no time, your neck should start feeling better. Remain consistent with those workouts, those neck exercises, until the pain goes completely away. And then you just do maintenance. Hey, coach, what is your prediction on Whaley versus Rose? That's from Leo Liu. That's a tough one, man. That's such a tough fight to call. Rose is so technical. Whaley is so powerful and ferocious. Man, that's just too hard for me to call. Honestly, I'd have to break down all their fights and look at them. I haven't, so I'm not going to make a call, but that was one we were talking about in Vegas, and I was watching the highlights of that fight, and I was like, wow, that's a tough one to call. Really tough fight to call. This is Russian, so I'm unable to read. How you combine your own training and teaching classes? Do you train during classes? Okay, so what do I do personally? I teach class. First of all, I teach technique, and then I'll jump in a role with everyone. If we're doing MMA sparring, usually... if it's pro sparring, I just coach. And if it's amateur training, I'll glove up and spar with the amateurs as well. Sometimes during the amateur classes, the pros come in also to get some extra sparring. So I get to work with them also. I get to move around with them as well. At TriStar, before the shutdown, we were having MMA sparrings every morning. So like situational sparrings. So I was jumping in there, getting my hands dirty on that practice, which I was absolutely loving. I was really getting in good shape again, and I was really getting in sparring shape again. So I was absolutely loving it. Unfortunately, the shutdown just hit us hard again. So right now, that's to be put on pause for a little bit. Okay, let's see what else we have here. You missed the super chat. No, I think I did them all. All right, let me scroll because I'm getting a lot of you missed the super chat. Paul versus Askren, final prediction. Jake wins, in my opinion. That's from Stefan Gisbert. I don't know why I'm so excited about this fight. I really want to see what's going to happen. I know you guys are going to freaking, you're going to get upset with me. You're going to be like, coach, you get so many world-class athletes. You get to watch so many world-class athletes fight almost every single week. And you're excited about a YouTuber versus a wrestler in a boxing match. I'll tell you guys, the only reason I'm so excited is because I really don't know what to expect. Now, guys, you've seen my breakdown. I'm not going to do it again. Askren wins, in my opinion. He's going to rough him up. He's going to push him up against the ropes. He's going to get his hands on him. He's going to maul him. It's going to be like a bear, you know, trying to knock down a beehive from a tree. You know, it's just going to be like, it's just going to be a hustle. Okay, he's just going to hustle. And he's just going to put the hurt on Paul. But Paul's going to win one or two rounds, especially early on. Okay, maybe even three. But eventually eventually Askren puts his hands on him. So why do I want to watch this fight so bad? Like, I'm even thinking of paying for it and watching it live. I don't know what I'm going to do, but, man, I just don't know what's going to happen. It's a boxing fight. You know, if it was MMA, I wouldn't want to watch because I know Askren would just beat him in 1 minute. It would just be ridiculous. You know, Askren would take him down and just smash, just complete smash. But this is intriguing. This is going to be fun to see how Askren deals with the fact that all his favorite weapons are gone. He's got to just box. If God is the source of everything, isn't he also the source of evil? Why does he allow such horrible things to happen? Thanks, coach, for your wisdom. That's from Ranjan Tomas. Ranjan Tomas, that's a very deep question. How deep are we in the podcast? Hold on, let me check here. Am I allowed to answer this question yet? Hold on. Usually we do a good 30 minutes in. Okay, you're on the borderline. Look, I'm going to put pause on that question. I will answer it, but not right away. Okay, this is what we call the problem of evil. I have lots to say on that topic, I promise you. Ranjan, stick around to about 10 minutes from now. I'm going to answer your question. Hey, coach, what is your advice for someone to get their life together in the mid-30s? That's from Gadan Puck. What the hell were you doing in your 20s, Gadan? Why do you need to stop now to assess yourself in your mid-30s? Now you want to get serious? My goodness. You're Gadan. Maybe you should write a book about what you did in your 20s. That would be, you know, I'm sure it's a very spicy decade for you. Okay, all seriousness. If you're in your mid-30s, you should really get buckled down and get serious. You know, like, in my opinion, do it this way. Career, money, wife. If you're in the mid-30s, that's what you should be thinking. Get a career so you can make that money, so you can have a wife, so you can have some kids. That's the ultimate goal, in my opinion, especially when you're mid-30s. If you haven't done that yet, start getting organized, okay? Creative 2K77. What is my base? BJJ or Muay Thai? Question mark. I've been doing Nogi BJJ at a Muay Thai gym for 5 years, on and off, once a week for fun. One of the Muay Thai coaches took me and we trained twice a day for a month, seriously, like for a fight. I'm not sure what you're trying to say here. I think you're training off and on BJJ and Muay Thai, and you're asking me what's your base. I would say you're probably doing MMA right now. So you start off as a base in MMA. You don't really have a base if you're doing everything 50-50, which is nothing wrong with that. You know, eventually you'll learn to blend the techniques better than somebody who has a base, possibly. Hey, coach, you have any advice for training for my first MMA fight? That's from Sparky. Yeah, Sparky, you know what? I will tell you, spar, film your sparring, watch yourself spar, and give yourself an honest look. What do I need to work on? You know, be sure that you're self-aware of what's going on in your game. Us coach, how about Islam Makhachev versus Conor? That's from Rosin. Rosin, I would love to see that fight. For those of you who don't know, supposedly Conor canceled his fight with Poirier. I think Makhachev would be a great replacement, but guess what? Makhachev would be a much harder fight. Guys, in my opinion, I've said it before, Makhachev deserves a title fight. He's the most underrated, overlooked fighter in UFC. In my opinion, he beats Conor McGregor. Because also, not because he's a better wrestler, striker, jiu-jitsu, give it all to him. He's also a southpaw. And McGregor hasn't fared too well with southpaw. So I would pick Islam Makhachev. Great replacement for Poirier if the fight is indeed truly canceled. These things have a way of working themselves out. Maybe they're just hyping up the fight. I don't know what it is, but I will tell you that I would pick Makhachev. Khabib letting people put him in guillotines only to tire them out. Is that a new age MMA strategy? Is the condition to choke, or is it a technique? That's from Varum. Varum, I'll tell you something. I don't think he does it on purpose. You're talking about the Poirier fight. Poirier had him in a guillotine. He got out of it once, twice. I think it was only two attempts. And I don't think he was doing it on purpose. No, I think you wouldn't give your neck to somebody because it's such a vulnerable part unless you've never been choked. It's been years since you've been choked. Now, I don't know when last time Khabib was guillotined. But personally, I would not put my neck in somebody's guillotine in a real fight for fun. No, absolutely not. Hi, coach. What are the most essential BJJ techniques for self-defense? Trying to get my family to try jiu-jitsu for self-defense benefits. That's from Will Z. Well, Will Z, I would recommend you make it mandatory. If you're talking about your kids, mandatory. Blue belt is mandatory. Just like you made it mandatory for them to learn mathematics, science, history. They went to school. You made it mandatory for them to learn their ABCs, etc. Fitness, health and fitness is also mandatory. Don't forget, if you're talking about your children now, they're minors. They're your responsibility. Your job, in my opinion, is to prepare them for life. Now, when they become adults, they become their own person. But as of now, if they're still not adults and they're under your care, it is in my opinion that you have the duty to teach them math, science, physics, religion, and jiu-jitsu. Also, jiu-jitsu. Mandatory, my opinion, minimum mandatory should be blue belt. You shouldn't have less than a blue belt. Now, what is the most essential BJJ techniques for fighting? I would say, look, you'd have to have boxing and jiu-jitsu. Boxing and jiu-jitsu. Don't just do jiu-jitsu because somebody's going to hit them for the first time. They're going to be scared. They're not going to know how to block or defend. Now, I don't believe in head strikes for younger children, so I would teach them boxing without actually making them spar. Okay, so I make my kids do like body punch sparring, so they're allowed to punch each other in the body. And that's okay. That's very, very safe. It's, you know, taekwondo, they do it. Karate, they do it. But I would just teach them how to jab, jab, cross, left hook, knee, kick, punch, elbow. I recommend boxing as a minimum. Muay Thai is even better. Boxing and Muay Thai is even better. I teach my kids boxing, Muay Thai, taekwondo. So, and also teach them jiu-jitsu. Headlock escapes. I made a video on headlock escapes. Check out jujiclub.com. Promo code GUARD5. Get $5 off. And by the way, guys, all videos on jujiclub.com now are streamable. Okay, you don't have to download them on your hard drive now. You can just buy them and stream them on your account. You log in, you make an account, and now you have a library. So I'm releasing a new video hopefully next week. It's going to be added to the Jujitsu Club website. Now you guys can sign in, watch online. You don't have to fill up your hard drive anymore. That way I can make the videos longer, more high def, etc. Now, with that said, get the headlock video. I did a headlock escape video. Kids always headlock each other. Super important. And this video, the headlock escape, is also for adults. I'm just using my kids to demonstrate the techniques, but the techniques are identical for adults as well. And just get a good basics BJJ video. But don't forget the importance of striking and wrestling. Okay, just don't forget that importance. It's very important. Okay, I answered this one already. Okay, where are we at now? How many minutes are we in? 37 minutes in. Hi, coach. I would like some advice on choosing what to focus on. I'm 26. Feel like a jack of few trades, master of none. How to pick a career? That's from Popo. Well, Popo, I would tell you, I would ask you this, okay? Sit yourself in a room. Ask yourself, what are you really passionate about? What are you passionate about? What do you love to do that if you did this every day, it's not work? Okay. If you know how to make a Venn diagram, please look into it and make a Venn diagram. Then ask yourself, what are you talented at? What have people told you during your life that you're good at? Maybe somebody told you you're very musical, or maybe somebody told you that you're incredibly strong, or you're very intelligent. Or maybe somebody told you you're a real people person. You know, it's easy to feel comfortable around you. You're a great communicator. Something, you have some talent that somebody's been addressing or pointing out since you're very young. Okay. And then the third bubble would be something people would pay for, you know, something that's you can market or sell. Okay. So for me, I have a passion for martial arts. I've been told I'm very analytical, very intelligent, very smart, analytical, smart guy. So teaching martial arts is something I would never get sick of. Studying martial arts is something that I would never get sick of. And that third diagram, yes, it fits. People want to pay to learn martial arts. People want to pay to see an instructional. People want to pay to be coached by you. People want to pay, etc. Okay, so now I had other passions, other things I've done, other businesses, but never more than my martial arts career. Why? Because I'm more passionate. I think about martial arts all day long, so I'll do it well. So try to fulfill those three criteria. What were they? Let's repeat them real quick again. One, you have a passion for this set activity. You have a passion for this subject. Two, you have a talent. You're born with some talent. You're born with something special, whatever it may be. And then three, somebody will pay you for this service. You would make the world better by trading your services for money. Somebody will be happy to pay you. You're not scamming anybody. They're happy to do it. Fulfill those three criteria. Draw a Venn diagram, and I think you'll find the cross section is something that's very important, and it'll help you succeed. Okay, I got a few more super chats, I think, that popped up. Did I miss them? Okay, here we go. Daniel Magel, what do you think about Armen Tsarukyan? I think he's a great fighter. His last fight was a great performance. You know, he's good striking, very, very explosive double leg, incredible level changing, very, very talented guy. I think he's going to go far. He fought Islam Makhachev, the fighter I was just talking about recently. I just mentioned Islam Makhachev, in my opinion, the most underrated fighter in UFC. And they had a great battle, and he did very well. Well, he held his own against Islam for quite a bit, you know, and then fell behind. But it showed how much talent and promise he has. I've been drilling your guillotine transitions with great success in no-gi. I'm struggling to hit guillotines in the gi. Any suggestions? That's from Kevin. Okay, guys, for those of you who don't know, I did a guillotine video called Guillotine Traps. It's a phenomenal video. I think you guys will enjoy it immensely. But I sold the rights to that video to BJJ Fanatics. Okay, so if you want to get that video, check it out on BJJ Fanatics. Now, why don't guillotines work as well in gi as they do in no-gi? Well, they do work well. It's just that there's certain collar chokes that are even better. Because don't forget, with the gi, you have that very strong collar grip. Once you grab that collar, it's very difficult for your opponent to just ignore that collar. He has to address that collar grip, okay? Because the collar grip can turn into a choke quite easily. So in gi, the guillotine is, I would say, not as powerful and not as strong as the collar chokes. So that's why I think most competitors will opt for the collar choke. So the gi, the guillotine is mostly for no gi, okay? Because obviously you don't have a collar when you're doing no gi. Okay, guys. If you guys permit me, I will now answer my good friend's question about the problem of evil. Are we in deep enough? Oh, we're a few minutes out. Okay, so I'm going to answer that question at, let's say, 45 minutes in. Hello, Chief. Do you think BJJ gyms need to do more wrestling takedowns? In mind, we never do it. That's from Luca. I think wrestling and jiu-jitsu should be one art. So sometimes I teach just ground. Sometimes I teach mostly stand-up. Sometimes I just teach stand-up, underhooks, underhooks, snap-downs, double legs, body lock. Sometimes it's a blend of both. It's part of the curriculum. Take all of wrestling and put it together with the curriculum of jiu-jitsu. That's it. Don't separate the two. The two should never be separated. I think that the art of just training on the ground is going to die. It's going to die. In the future, gyms will not have teachers who only know ground. That's my opinion. I think this is slowly going to die. Because the jiu-jitsu schools that adopt wrestling are just going to be better. They're going to be better. So future generations are not going to teach just ground. They're going to teach wrestling and ground, because the future generations that are going to teach are going to come from the most successful gyms. And the most successful gyms are going to be the ones who teach wrestling and jiu-jitsu together. I heard GSP talk about nervous system overload on Joe Rogan. Do you think it will be a major factor in Joshua versus Fury fight in favor of Fury? Question mark. That's from Manu S. You know, Fury's a little bit nuts, so it's hard to tell what kind of mindset he's gonna go in there. Right? He's a bit hard to read. I think that's tough, man. It's very hard to read. It's unpredictable. I think he could be his own worst enemy, from what I've understood of him. So it could be. It could be in his favor, or it could be completely opposite, depending on how he's going to react. In the UK, wrestling is not too big, but I have a judo club not too far from me. I know karate has a lot of BS. Is this the same for judo? No, judo is not BS. Okay, judo is 100% legitimate. Don't forget, it's an Olympic sport. You know, do you think these guys are just BSing their way all the way to the Olympics? If you go into a judo studio and you roll with anybody who's even remotely a hopeful for the Olympics, you're going to get thrown. You're going to get thrown bad. No, judo practitioners are as serious as they come. Okay, don't underestimate judo. And there's a lot of good, great karate schools out there. I know there's a lot of flowery business McDojo karate schools. Yes, they hyped up the name in the 70s and 80s, and then people banked on it. Yes, but there are some very legitimate schools. And in my opinion, the greatest karate school in the world is Upstate Karate. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and Ray Thompson run the best karate school in the world, Upstate Karate. I missed one super chat. Let me scroll. You didn't read my super chat. Please read chat. That's from Stefan Mervik. Stefan, I think I read all of them. Sorry, my friend. I'm scrolling here. I don't find it. I'm going to have to move on. I might have answered it not knowingly. I cannot remember if I did. Coach, will your students need a proof of vaccination to train at your gym? That's from Leas. Leas, no, because right now Johnson & Johnson are again pausing their vaccination. So there was one vaccination that got paused. I can't remember the name. Now Johnson & Johnson in the news just paused their vaccinations. Why? Blood clots. Guys, they cannot know what's going to happen long term with these vaccines. There's not enough. There hasn't been enough testing. Corona's only been around this new pandemic. Corona's been around a lot longer. Yes, I understand. I'm talking about the pandemic. They've been rushing to make that vaccine. Now, I tell myself, whoever finds it first is going to become hella rich, okay? He's going to be a bazillionaire. Did they grease some palms? Did they pay off some people to let this vaccine slide without it being thoroughly tested? I don't know. I'm not there in the lab. Maybe some scientist is going to come on and totally contradict what I'm saying. He's going to be like, no, it's been thoroughly tested. Maybe he's going to say something like, it's the most tested vaccine in history. Maybe that guy's bank account has been, you know, it's been injected with large sums of money. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. Okay. I'm not a vaccine expert, but I don't trust the vaccine. I have to be honest with you guys. I know I might get in trouble. They might flag this video. Whatever. Let them do it. I don't trust this vaccine. It came out too fast, too quick. There's too much monetary incentive. Would I inject it in my body? Personally, no. Unless I'm restricted. I'm not allowed to fly anymore. That's the one thing that's going to make me want to take the vaccine. I'll be like, you know what? If you guys are killing me, take my, go ahead. Maybe, you know, but I have to travel. I have to travel for work. That's the one time I would say yes. Now, I'm a believer in vaccines, guys. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm a big believer in vaccines. I think vaccines save the world from many ills, okay? I think vaccines is one of the greatest things ever to be invented, you know, in humanity, okay? It's one of the greatest, most precious things. I'm a big believer in vaccines. My kids are vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. But not coronavirus vaccine. Why? I think there's just too much monetary incentive, and I don't trust that they didn't cut corners. Why? Not because the scientific community is corrupt or the medical community is corrupt, but because human beings are corrupt. And I feel that when they see lots of money, they lose their minds a bit, and they're ready to risk my life and your life and our health to make that bank. Okay, so that's how I see it. So I'm going to wait on the vaccine. I'm going to see how it turns out. I'm not in a rush to be injected with something that I feel has not been thoroughly tested. The fact that they're pulling it off the shelves, they're asking people to take a pause. What happened to it's so secure, you know? People, politicians taking it out in front of everybody. Yeah, oh, look, I trust it so much. Okay, you trust it so much. Let's see what happens in 10 years. Hello, coach. Uni is mentally draining and kids in uni don't seem to care. How do I maintain a peak performance and maximize growth in uni experience? By uni, I think you're talking about university. I believe that in Europe, they call it uni. Bang Baba asks, hello, coach. Uni is mentally draining and kids in uni don't seem to care. How do I maintain peak performance and maximize growth in uni experience? So how do I go to university and train? This is something I'll tell you, I struggle with. It was a very difficult time in my life. Going to school, training, working. It was crazy having a social life. It was insane. It was an insane time in my life. Actually, I had burnout. I was diagnosed with burnout. Just be very careful. Prioritize. And here's what I'll tell you. I'll be honest with you. When I went to university, I would take what we call Mickey Mouse classes. Now, everybody does that. I mean, we used to call it Mickey Mouse classes, or what you guys probably say, easy credits. You know, like take a workload that's like easy to manage, but put one or two classes, you know, you need credit. Everybody does this, right? You're going to take, I don't know, some weird class. It's so easy to pass. You heard it's really easy to pass. You're going to get your two credits and it's not the core of what you're studying, but who cares? You know, you have to take these classes anyway. You have to take extra credits. So, and I did that. And also later, in my university, when I was going to university, I reduced my class load. I was full-time student, full-time training, full-time trainer, and I reduced to one or two classes per semester. And I just did it just took me longer to finish my degree, but I did it. But I just lowered the especially after that burnout, I had to take less classes because I was doing too much and I wasn't going to give up on training. You know, I really, really want to continue with my training. Coach, I just bought yesterday the Tim Tam TriStar bundle. How do I use the most efficient, especially for low back pain? That's from Nader. Nader, congratulations. You bought the best set there is in the game. I guarantee you, you're going to have reduced back pain very shortly. But do me a favor, get the book, Becoming a Supple Leopard by Kelly Starrett. Becoming a Supple Leopard. Get the book. Get the second edition, the black version. It's a black cover. It's the best book you can get. Use the Tim Tam and practice the alignment postures. I promise you, your back's going to get better. What would you recommend for a long, lanky, sawpaw grappler who likes to kick, stay safe on the outside, shoot for takedowns, flyweight? Love, UK. Well, love right back to you, Popo. If you're a long and lanky man, master the jab. You must have a great jab, okay? If you're a lanky guy, master the jab. Spend a lot of time learning how to jab. Along the same lines, do you think CNS fatigue from training interferes with mentally demanding jobs? Okay, so CNS is central nervous system fatigue. If you overload your CNS, in my opinion, you have broken everything down. You cannot train. You cannot study. If I overload your CNS, even reading a book should be difficult. Even having, staying out, just relaxing out in the sun should be difficult. We must never overload the CNS, the central nervous system. Why? Because everything depends on your CNS. So if you are feeling CNS overload, by the way, the symptoms for CNS overload are identical to depression. Okay, don't forget this. CNS overload, overtraining, the symptoms are the same as depression. So if you're feeling down, lethargic, unhappy, nothing brings you joy, you're probably overtrained. Okay, take 2 or 3 days off of just active rest, from 2 to 3 days to 2 to 3 weeks of active rest. What's active rest? Ride your bike, go for a light jog. Do 50% of what you would normally do. Okay, so I find that's better than doing nothing. I think going for a walk is better than doing nothing. So go from 5% to 50%. Your workouts must range between 5 to 50% of what you would normally do. That's active rest. Okay, because you're below the threshold of sending your body back into recovery. Okay, now if you do 51% to 90%, now you're sending your body back into recovery. Okay, you're breaking down muscle tissue, etc. You're retraining your body. But in my opinion, if you keep it between 5 and 50%, let's call it 49%. You're just doing maintenance, but you're circulating the blood. And circulating the blood and circulating the nutrients, the food that you ate, is going to help. But above all, sleep. Make sure you sleep well. Do not cut corners on sleep. Hey, coach, I gassed out after my first jiu-jitsu competition. In practice, I usually able to do 8 rounds without getting tired. I don't understand why. That's from Mustafa. Mustafa, you're one of many guys who've had this happen to them. Okay, so let me tell you why. You know, John Denar used to tell us, look, walk across this board here. You know, this 2x4. You can do it. It's so easy. Now, let me hang that 2x4 100 feet in the air. Walk across it now. All of a sudden, the same 2x4. It's not the same 2x4 in your mind anymore. Okay, now you're thinking about falling. You're thinking about the consequences. When you're fighting, you're competing, it's kind of the same thing. Okay, you're thinking about winning and losing. You're thinking about what people are watching you, what they're thinking. You're thinking about the points on the board, etc. One, try to recreate that in practice. Take that with you in your mind. You're like, if I was in a competition, how would I feel? You know, if somebody, if they were counting points, where would this role have led me? Would I be behind? Would I be in front? Now, don't get overly competitive and rip your training partners to shred, but try to take that mentality with you a little bit. Okay, I emphasize a little bit. The other thing is you need to be in better shape for competition than you need to be enrolling in class, because people in class don't go at the same intensity. They don't. In competition, people are trying to rip your arm out of your socket. It's not a game anymore. In practice, they know you, they like you, they're comfortable with you. You're not the enemy on the other side. Okay, so their approach is different. So my training partners are less aggressive than, or less intense than my future opponents that I'm going to meet on the mat in competition. And two, there's something going on in my head. I'm making a big deal out of everything. Okay, you got to learn that, you know, a fight is a fight. And what really counts is the good moves. You got to try to block. What I'm trying to say is you got to try to block all that out. How do you block all that out? By desensitizing yourself a little bit every day. You know, when you walk in the gym, pretend you're walking into your competition. You know, before you eat to go to practice, you'd be like, what would I eat if it was competition day? I'm going to practice. Like, try to replay it. Try to create the scenario again in your mind. Try to give yourself the illusion that you're competing again. Okay. Even though you're walking in your familiar dojo, try to imagine yourself walking into competition day. Coach, what do you think about knees over toes guy on YouTube? He preaches for squatting with the knee passing the toe. Let me take a look at this guy. I've heard actually about him. Let's take a look at Mr. Knees Over Toes. Let's take a look here. All right, let's see what this man has to say.
Walking back.
Oh, is this Knees Over Toes guy? Okay. All right, let's have a look here. My new improved button pushing skills. Let me wow you guys with some button pushing skills. Here we go.
Backwards is the first level of knees over toes training. So set a 10-minute timer and walk backwards at a comfortable pace.
Walking backwards is actually very good for your knees. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Actually, running backwards I prefer, but going back, when you have knee problems, take a lap, but run it backwards.
Perfect form to you just means that you're not working through any pain, but to me means that your knee is actually going over your toes on each step. So if you'd like to have your form coach send your last pass from a side angle. In your first year on the ATG system, I want to constantly remind you that we're beginning a long-term process, which we're going to get and then maintain the rest of our lives, of being good and strong and pain-free in this position, not only in a flat-footed position. We're also going to get world-class with our knees behind our toes, but this is a huge missing link that for most of us who've had chronic knee pains, even surgeries, no one ever bothered to get us good at this, which is the very position that most of our knee pains and injuries occur. Not to mention, this then strengthens the muscles that protect our Achilles, our feet, our shins. So yes.
You know what? It's interesting because I was taught the complete opposite for years. Sorry, hold on a second. For years, I had knee pain because I was going knees over toes for years. And then I found Kelly Starrett's work, and he said, don't put your knees over your toes, and my knee pain disappeared. Now, this guy is telling me the complete opposite. Now, this is not, in my opinion, very surprising. Okay, science always does that. You know, science always has a revolution because more of the picture is being revealed, and now new contexts appear and new information, old information is interpreted in new ways. Is it possible that knees over toes is also correct in certain circumstances? It can be. I have to explore this man's work, which I will, and I'll look into it. But I'll tell you something. In my years of putting my knees over my toes, I did develop knee pain over time. Now, this guy might have a solution to why. And it could be even better than Kelly Starrett's solution. I'd have to explore and look at it. But for now, this is the extent of what I know of this man's work. And I would have to see how he does knees over toes that allows him to operate pain-free. So I have to yet explore it. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm actually very interested. I'm going to save this for later and give it a watch. Hey, coach, when are you doing the Sam Harris reaction video? That's from Abdul Murad. Very soon. Got to do it very soon. I'm going to ask for so much. I just got to find the time, but I'm going to do it. I promise you it's coming soon. Coach, do you think jiu-jitsu should be in the Olympics? Absolutely. 100% it should be in the Olympics. Okay, guys, let me answer that question about evil. My friend asked me, I'm forgetting his name now. He said, look, if God is the source of everything, then isn't he also the source of evil? You know, some poor baby dies and that's evil. Some poor baby chokes on a marble and... Didn't God put that marble there? Didn't God create that baby? Why did he bring the two together? Isn't that proof against God? This is Epicurus. Epicurus brought this up. Epicurus said, look, if God is so powerful and so loving, then why did he let evil happen in the world? He either doesn't exist because it looks like nobody cares, or he's not that powerful. You can't do anything about it. Your God is not really omnipotent. Or he just doesn't care. Which one is it? He's either all powerful and doesn't care, or he doesn't have all that power. He can't do anything about it. That baby and that marble, he couldn't stop it. He's like, oh dear. Or the third option is your God doesn't exist. So, what are the classic counter arguments to the problem of evil? Epicurus thought he had scored a slam dunk. Actually, he didn't. Okay. The position turns out to be self-defeating. Why? Because then we ask Epicurus, we say, how do you know it's evil that a baby chokes on a marble? How do you know that? Because if there is no God, of course, this might be hard for you guys to understand because maybe you're not very familiar with Nietzsche and many other great philosophers who prove to us that the second there is no God to judge among us, the second there is no God, there is no good and evil. There's just matter and the void. There is just matter and the void. So a baby chokes on a marble and you think it's sad, but that's just your own personal narrative. That's your own personal way of painting the world. There's no actual evil out there. There's no actual evil happening. That's just the way you see the world. That's just your own biased interpretation. Now, if you actually believe that evil exists, like I do, I believe that evil exists. When I see a baby choking on a marble, I think that's a great evil and I feel very sad, obviously. Maybe that was a poor taste example. I apologize, but maybe I should have said, if somebody gets robbed, okay, let's use that example. Somebody mugs, one person mugs another, robs the person of their wallet and their jewelry, etc. Is that evil? I would say yes, but if you're an atheist, if you're Epicurus, you can't say it's evil. All you could say is that guy took her money, took her wallet, took her purse, whatever it was, mugged the guy, mugged the girl, whatever you want to be. And I find it distasteful. I find it unappealing. But that's my own personal perspective. There's no actual evil being done. Evil would be just a construct of my own mind. Okay, that's one argument. So if you're pointing at something and you're saying that's evil, you're ipso facto admitting God exists because there would be no evil unless God exists. This is a very famous question asked by Plato. For those of you who want to learn more about this, read the book Phaedo, which I think is a great introduction to philosophy. The book Phaedo, excuse me, not Phaedo. Not Phaedo, excuse me, not the book Phaedo. Phaedo is not a good introduction. I'm thinking about Euthyphro, pardon me, okay? Again, I'm fasting, Ramadan, blood sugar is low, guys, forgive me when I stumble like that. Euthyphro is a great introduction. Phaedo is not, okay? Phaedo is very advanced. Euthyphro, the book Euthyphro, is a very easy, fun read. And Plato asks the question, does God say something is evil because within it is the germ of evil, or is it evil because God said so? Either way, we can't get to this concept of evil without God. Okay, we can't make it literally true. If so, this is why many people don't understand why Immanuel Kant, one of his proofs for God was that he said, I have this moral law within me. I'm experiencing right and wrong in my own mind, in my own inner private experience, because each one of us is having a private experience inside our own mind. He says, within my own mind, I discover this thing, this moral law. And this moral law could only come, I could know nothing about morality. So if there was only matter and the void, okay, building blocks bouncing around the universe, they would never come to know the moral law because there is no moral law. Building blocks do not generate moral law. What can generate moral law? Only something divine. Only something divine. This inner experience that Kant was talking about, he was saying, look, this inner experience is divine. So if you look at the book, if you look at the book of Genesis or the Quran, they say the same thing. Listen to the narrative here. Adam was made by clay or soil or mud, okay, depending on your interpretation. That's the building block. And then Adam is there, he's inanimate. And God breathes into him his spirit. So now Kant is making the same discovery, but not using the Bible or Quran. He's not being religious at all. Yes, he was raised Christian, but he rejected all that later on. He rejected the church. He later believed in God because he came very close to it. He explored atheism, I would say, to the extreme amount. Okay, like he couldn't go any further. And he realized, hey, within me, there's this mystical, holy, spiritual, there's this divine experience within. This private experience is divine. And within this divine experience, he discovers the moral law. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but When I read Kant, I was like, for sure he studied Islam. For sure, I was so certain because I studied Islamic philosophy, and when I studied Kantian philosophy, I'm like, my God, he's parroting a lot of great Muslims said. And the thing is, in the West, what's sad is the Westerners don't know anything about Islamic philosophy, nothing. So they think they came up, they think they invented it all. Now the Greeks influenced the Muslims, and the Muslims influenced the Europeans, but the Europeans later on kind of swept that Muslim influence under the rug. But it's unsweepable, okay? There's no doubt Islam influenced Western philosophy. There's no doubt, it's impossible. The Enlightenment was due to Islam. The European Enlightenment was due to Islam. Okay, more on that on another topic. On another day. Immanuel Kant, when I was reading his materials, I was really amazed how much they mirrored Islam. And then somebody sent me his thesis, his PhD thesis, and he starts his thesis with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I couldn't believe it until I saw it with my own eyes. In his own handwriting, Immanuel Kant writes, "In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful." For those of you who don't know, that's the opening line in every chapter in the Quran, except for one chapter. It's the opening line. Why would Immanuel Kant write "in the name of God" the way the Muslims write it on his thesis? Why? Now, there's massive amounts of speculation. Nobody knows. At the end of the day, he never explained himself. I think it's because he saw a lot of parallels between what he discovered within himself and Islamic mysticism. This is my conclusion. He studied Islamic mysticism, and he found within his own philosophy to have many parallels. And one of those parallels is that the private experience you're having in your own head is one of morality. You see evil in the world and you cannot deny yourself. However, if I ask a gorilla about evil or chimpanzee or rhino, he knows nothing about what I'm talking about. Human beings are very special in this way. We're very unique in this way. We see that even though we have the power to take from you, kill you, take your resources or whatnot, I find it immoral. I find it reprehensible. I find it ugly. I find it gross. This is a major problem for Epicurus' theory of the problem of evil. Okay, the problem of evil falls by the wayside because if it's true there is no God because you saw evil, we have to ask you, how did you notice there was evil? You can never see evil if God doesn't exist. If God doesn't exist, there would be no moral law. It would be impossible. Building blocks, the void and matter will never produce the thought of evil. Okay, actually matter and void should never produce thoughts. I don't care how complicated a machine you build a machine the size of a galaxy, it will never produce thoughts. Okay, so there's this moral law within us, there's this divine aspect within us, there's a spark within us, there's the breath of God within us, there's this special something within us, and that something tells us that that's immoral. So that was one argument from Immanuel Kant. Well, it wasn't just Immanuel Kant. Many thinkers made it in the past. The other argument was, is a very important argument. Okay, let's say, for instance, there's a earthquake and 100 people die in a building. People say, why would God let these 100 people die? It's evil. Therefore, I don't believe in God. If there was a God, he wouldn't let that building collapse and crush those 100 people. I'm not going to repeat the previous argument. That was one. This is the second argument. They say, how do you know it's evil? You're interpreting it as evil because you think death is evil. So for instance, I always hear Sam Harris talk about this, you know, like he says, oh, look, this evil touched this person. How do you know that that person is not happier being dead? This is a question that Socrates asked, okay, in the Book of Phaedo. The one I recommended was a little bit advanced for a beginner, but somebody who know, actually, excuse me, it's not in the Book of Phaedo, it's in the Apology. In the Apology, he goes, because it's right before Phaedo, so usually they're read together. Okay, usually these books are read together, but this book I'm specifically talking about now, where he makes this argument, is the Apology. You know, in the Apology, Socrates finds himself being sentenced to death. Okay, so they said to Socrates, hey, Socrates, you have corrupted the youth. You're teaching them to question our gods. You're teaching them to think on their own. You're teaching them to disagree with their forefathers. I'm being very fast and loose here with the with the accusations, because it's not exactly that they accused him for, but I don't think you guys would understand exactly what he was accused for. He was accused for not believing the Greek gods, but also making up his own gods and being atheist at the same time. It's just complicated. It's not important to this conversation. What's important to this conversation is they said, look, you're corrupting the youth. You're making them think in non-traditional ways. You're making them rebel against us. They think they know better than us now. They're questioning the way we do things. They're questioning the way the Athenians do things. So we're going to put you to death. Now, his trial was a little more complicated than that, because the way it worked back then in Athens, if you're found guilty. What the hell is this thing? Some unicorn glitter from my daughter. If you're found guilty, the prosecution gives a suggested penalty. It's not the judge that gives a penalty. It's the prosecution. The prosecution says, we choose this penalty. We think Socrates should be, let's say, lashed 100 times. That was not the suggested punishment. Socrates can come back and say, look, I prefer to be lashed. I think I should be lashed 70 times. Now, the jury is going to vote again on which one of these two is going to be the punishment. So imagine Socrates were to say, I think I should be lashed once. They're probably going to go with the 99 because once is not enough. So they only have two choices. So it was very typical for the prosecution to demand death. Why? Because they'd want Socrates to go lower, but not too low. So they were expecting Socrates, probably, this is what scholars say, to suggest being banished. So the prosecution said death, not because they really wanted to kill Socrates, because they wanted Socrates to say, look, fine, kick me out of Athens. I won't bother you anymore. But instead, Socrates said, look, I'll give you a petty amount of money, because his students were begging him to. First, he said, no, you should give me free meals. That's what I think my punishment should be, free meals. He was throwing it back in the face of the Athenians. But his followers were begging him to make a monetary suggestion. So he said, fine, I'll make a monetary suggestion, this amount, and not death. But it was a low amount. Socrates wanted to die is what I'm trying to tell you. Socrates was accepting death. Okay, according to scholars, they're seeing basically this is how they interpret it. He was telling them, look, kill me. And then he gives a beautiful speech. Okay, he gives his closing argument, his last words to the Greeks that sentenced him to death. And he says, look, death is one of two things. Death is one of two things. It's either an afterlife, which they called then Hades. Okay. Where he's like, I'm going to be, you know, in an even better place than you guys are right now. Or it's an eternal sleep. If you don't believe in Hades and you think death is the end, it's an eternal sleep. And he says, who wouldn't love an eternal sleep? If I wake a king out of his sleep, if a king is sleeping, imagine a king is sleeping and he's deep in the sleep, deep in the sleep, and he's resting and he's recuperating. He's in a very deep sleep. And you wake him up and you tell him, hey, wake up. I made you your favorite dish. That king's probably going to put you to the guillotine, wouldn't he? You disturbed one of the greatest pleasures a human being can have. He's in a deep sleep. How could you interrupt him? There's no meal or money or gold or women that want to break that. You want to break that sleep. Let me finish my sleep. That sleep is so pleasurable. He goes, go ahead, kill me. It's one of those two things. He goes, which one is it? No one knows, he says. So you guys think you're condemning me? You think you're punishing me? You have no idea what you're talking about. You don't know what death is. You're taking a wild guess. So imagine those 100 people that died in that building. Imagine they're actually happier and better off than when they were here. You don't know what's on the other side, Socrates would tell you. You don't know. So I always like to make the argument. I was born in this life. I didn't exist in the past, and I exist today. My existence today contradicts everything you know about physics, contradicts absolutely everything you know about science, history, whatever. Because I used to not exist, and today I exist, and I exist in a way that no physics can explain. Nothing can explain how I exist. So I say, look, I believe I'm going to exist again. Even when I die, I believe I'm going to come back again. How am I going to come back again? Like I did the first time. This is actually a Quranic argument. You know, God says, was it hard to bring you about the first time? Think about it. You came to life the first time. Why do you think you're going to die and it's going to be the end? Why would you think that? When you used to be non-existent and now you are existent. Okay, so I hold very strongly to the argument. I think it's supremely logical and it's inevitable. That's why I would think everybody who did anything bad in their life, even Adolf Hitler, He thinks he got away with it by killing himself. Supposedly he killed himself. It ain't over. I don't think that, you know, he killed millions and millions of people. I don't think it's over. I think he's still gonna pay the consequences of his actions. If my enemies kill me, I'm waiting for you on the other side. I'm waiting for you on the other side. You think I'm dead, but wait till you go in the grave. Guess what you're gonna see on the other side? This face right here. It's never over. Just because death is there doesn't mean it's over. So that's another argument. You're presupposing that death is evil. How do you know these people are not even happier being dead? Okay. Then there's a third layer of argument against the problem of evil. And this layer is going to be hard for many to understand, but it's the most powerful argument. It's the most powerful argument. And this is a small circle discussion. Only a small amount of philosophers get to this table. Okay. Basically, if you were purely logical, everybody says they love logic. Oh, and they're married to logic. But then the conversation gets a little too intense and they bow out. They say, no. Those conclusions are way too much for us to believe. We cannot accept this conclusion. It goes against our primal instinct. We turn our back on logic. We won't go further with logic. Logic put food in our bellies. It put money in our bank accounts. It put a roof over our heads. That's as much as we want from logic. Don't go any further. Now, those who go further, in my opinion, they love logic. They truly love logic. They don't just love what logic can do. They're not just pragmatic. They love logic. They look at logic and they say, wow, logic, you're amazing. Tell me more about yourself. If you were truly logical and you were not prejudiced at all you would know about death and evil is that you're just constantly... Because here's the thing. Epicurus knew very well. Well, I shouldn't say he knew very well, but philosophers know very well. Well-trained philosophers know very well. You cannot tell the difference. Listen carefully here. One cannot tell the difference between being in a dream and being awake. It is literally impossible. No philosopher has ever figured out a way to tell the difference between being awake and being in a dream state. And we don't know if there's a difference between the two at all. So, why do you believe you're not in a dream right now? Because I'm telling you, it has to do with consensus reality. Other people are giving you consensus that this is presently not a dream. But like I've said in the past, imagine you had a dream where you hit a home run. Okay, you hit a home run in your dream and you run the home base and you kind of tip your cap, and the next day you go to work and everybody's like congratulating you on your home run that you hit last night. And you're like, wait a second, I woke up thinking that was a dream. No, we were all there. You hit the home run, you hit it towards the right field, and you tipped your cap at the end and they're giving you details. That would be them giving you consensus. If people give you consensus, your dream to you now is no longer a dream. It's reality. However, if you come in the next day to work and you're like, hey guys, last night I hit a home run and I tipped my cap and I hit it to the right side of the field and it was amazing. And people are like, what are you talking about? Last night you fell asleep on the couch. We're watching a movie and you fell asleep on the couch. What are you talking? Now consensus is broken. Consensus is broken. Others are not giving you consensus. Now to you, it was just an illusion of the mind. So your reality depends on consensus. But when you're in a dream, when you're in the dream state, everybody's giving you consensus. And you can have a dream where others are not giving you consensus. So you would confuse that for being an illusion. Anyways, it gets really sticky. At the end of the day, guys, we cannot base our understanding between reality and dreaming on consensus. Consensus is a faulty way to go about. It's a very faulty way to go about it. It's not proof. It's flimsy. It's just pure animal instinct you're running on. So because of this, Epicurus would have been painted in a corner. He would have said, look, it would be the equivalent of something bad happening to me in a dream. So for instance, if I was having a dream where a building collapsed on people and I woke up in the morning and I said, oh, I wouldn't be like, why did God give me a dream? You would have been like, it's not a big deal, you know, go on with your life. It's not that bad. You wouldn't be having this existential problem. You wouldn't be having this, you wouldn't entertain the idea of the problem of evil. You'd be like, look, it was just a dream. Yes, it put me through an adventure. It was an adventurous dream. I had highs and lows. But at the end, there was no harm done. In the end, it was just imagination. You can make your peace with that. Think about a child who spills their milk. They cry and they yell and they have a tantrum and they feel bad. And you, the adult, is just smiling and laughing and be like, look, it's just milk. We'll clean it up. That child is having an episode because he doesn't see that it's not a big deal. as his mind matures and becomes wiser, that spilled milk was an afterthought. It's nothing to him. It's nothing. It's just nothing. In the same way, this life will be nothing. All these tragedies we see, today we're living them. They're very scary, harmful, painful. But tomorrow they're just going to be like a dream. This is another answer to the Epicurean problem of evil. When more information is released, all these horrors and pains you felt, once we become wiser and more enlightened and more informed, they will feel like just an afterthought, just like if they were a dream. And think about when you had something difficult in your life. Many years later, it's not that big of a deal. I got over it. But in that time, you were so hard-pressed. Your interpretation of that event was so damaging to your psyche. But today, it's nothing. It's less than a mosquito bite. It's nothing to you. You just go on with your life and you're happy. So that's how, those are three arguments that address the problem of evil. But the main one, the first one is the easiest to understand, that you wouldn't know evil exists if there wasn't a God. So the question is, in the end, self-defeating. Okay, guys, with that said, we're an hour and 21 minutes in. I know a bunch of super chats flew in, and I always hate leaving the super chats because people spend good money on super chats. Okay, here we go. Message retracted from Mustafa. He super chatted himself to retract the message. Unbelievable. Okay, what else did I miss here? Okay, this one is just a super chat for money. You missed both of my super chats. That's from Sullivan. Okay, I'm going back just for Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, where are you? Hello, Faraz. Is it a good idea to try to get the octopus half guard even if the guy, top guy doesn't go negative? Or is it dogfight position more powerful? Assume equal skill in each position. I would only go octopus if the guy's negative, personally. I never go octopus if the guy's positive. Personally, I don't do that. I mean, if you're really strong in octopus and you like that position, try it out and let me know how it works. But I personally never go octopus unless the guy is going negative. But you know what? I'm thinking about it now. It makes sense what you're saying. I shouldn't shy away from going octopus if the guy's positive. I'd have to try that. You know what? Because I have a really strong octopus position where I like to grab the inside of my knee. You know what? I have to give that a try. I haven't tried that, actually. I haven't thought of that, actually. So thank you very much, 2357T. That is a really good suggestion. You know what? I'm going to try that in practice. I'm going to induce octopus position without my opponent going negative. And I'm not sure how it's going to work out, but I haven't tried that yet. Wow, you're blowing my mind here. Why haven't I tried it? Just never thought of it. But thanks for giving me that idea. All right. Hey, guys, I'm scanning through. Can you talk about Heidegger's being and time? That's from Joey Farmer. That's a very complicated topic. I don't think we're going to have the time to delve into Heidegger today, but definitely in the future. Jake Paul will destroy Ben Askren easily. That's from Patty Cakes, Patty Pie. Guys, I want you all to know that Patty Cakes, Patty Pie thinks Jake Paul will destroy Ben Askren. I'm sure you said it in that voice. I don't know, man. I think Ben wins, but who knows? I'm sure we'll do a post-fight analysis. That will be fun. But for some reason, I'm really intrigued to see that fight because I can't wait to see how it's going to look. You know, a wrestler versus a YouTuber in a boxing match. Incredible. Thoughts on Kobe? That's from Kelpash. I'm really excited to see what his next fight is. Okay, guys, let's do one last one, and then on a good note, and then I'm signing off. Favorite fighter, that's from Harmit. Favorite fighter of all time, I would say was Muhammad Ali. One reason is because he was the greatest boxer in the golden age of boxing. He was the greatest boxer in the golden age of boxing, when the best boxers, the best in the hardest division, heavyweight, man, where one punch can change everything. And he won consistently, and he beat the who's who. And he came back to be world champion again. He came back to be world champion again against the next generation. He beat two generations of fighters. And they were the back-to-back golden age heavyweights. The other thing is, he was also a very cerebral and intelligent person. And he stood up for the black community. He stood up for the rights of the Vietnamese. He was very anti-Vietnamese war. And I think now that we look back on it, he was right. Back then, it was a minority position. I think he was correct. I love what he said. No Viet Cong ever called me nigger. Now, that's a word I would never use unless I was quoting a black person. But he had the guts to say that live on TV and to the world. And he was right. He was correct. The Vietnamese are living their life on the other side of the world. So what if they're communists? That's their business. That's their business. If they want to operate as communists, if they see that's the best way for them to live, and they're doing that without imposing it on us, that is their business. Why would the U.S. fly young men overseas to fight, to kill and be killed? What is the point? He refused. And you know what, guys? Let me tell you something. They weren't going to give him a gun and put him in the swamp. If you watch his documentary, they were going to tell him, hey, hand out water bottles. Just keep the morale of the soldiers. The soldiers are going to be like, oh, Muhammad Ali is with us. He's backing us up. We're going to go and kill for America. We're going to go and kill for our rights or whatnot. Whatever propaganda you want to use. We're going to go and kill. And look, Muhammad Ali, a celebrity, is here with us. He's pushing us. He's encouraging us. He had the guts to say, no, this is wrong. You're sending out people to die for no reason, to kill or be killed for a reason that is not acceptable. Okay, so now a war should always only be defensive. Should only be defensive. And I thought it was amazing. And he was willing to go to jail for it. And not only did he go to jail for it, he came back and he was world champion again. They couldn't stop him from being world champion. They tried to take from him. They couldn't. His life is a tremendous inspiration. A tremendous inspiration. I find his boxing skill, and the fact that he did everything against the book. You know, and the book of boxing, you're not supposed to circle towards the power side. He only circled towards the power side. You're supposed to throw body punches to set up head punches. He never threw body punches. You're never supposed to go to the ropes. He always went to the ropes. Heavyweights are not supposed to dance on their toes. He always danced on his toes because they said heavyweights will get tired. It's inefficient. He did the opposite. Shows me that he mastered boxing to such an extent, because guys, don't forget, when you become a master of an art, you no longer need to follow the rules. You understand the rules so well now that they dissolve to you now. You know, like you look at Roy Jones, he doesn't fight with his hands up, chin down, shoulder shrug. No, he doesn't fight like that. He doesn't fight like a guy who's doing the basics. He fights his own way. He's transcended the rules of the basics of boxing. Ali did it like nobody else. So for me, he was the greatest fighter from combat sports of all time. And he was a tremendous human being. Yes, he had a rocky start. Okay, but that was a reaction to the racism he grew up with. In the end, he found his way, and he, in my opinion, stayed true to his principles. I respect him immensely as a fighter and immensely as a human being. No other person, I would say, reached that level in both criteria in modern day combat sports. Okay, I just find that he fulfilled that criteria nobody else is able to do that. He was not only a phenomenal fighter, but he was also a great human being. With that said, guys, I wish you all salam and a happy Ramadan. Ramadan Kareem to you all. Best wishes to you all out there. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you all. Please like, share, hit the bell notification for the next episode. And like usual, I had a good time. Thank you very much. I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. And I will see you all in the next episode. Thank you.